This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing, and First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for our program. In studio later, we'll hear from a couple of compelling guests, including Dr. Sanjay Juneja, a Baton Rouge oncologist, and also we'll hear from Wes Hawes, who's involved with a Blue Zoo Aquarium opening tomorrow in the Mall of Louisiana. He's a fascinating guy who's come this way by way of Idaho. But in our opening salvo for the first few segments, we are with the remarkable reporter Andrea Gallo of The Advocate, former editor of The Reveille. Back in her day when she was the editor of The Reveille, she had the chutzpah to sue the university, as in LSU, and it was an issue involving King Alexander, the newly crowned president of the old war school. And she has moved on in her career some 8 years later or so. King Alexander remains in the news for other reasons, and she has been covering that story that has tentacles that go far and wide and goes directly to the heart of the football program and now to the head coach of the biggest brand in the state of Louisiana, LSU football, Ed Orgeron. And good morning to you, Andrea Gallo.
Hi, Jim. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, if you'd like to join the conversation and talk with Andrea, 877-217-5757. It is a pleasure to talk with you, Andrea. And last Friday, we had a compelling witness before a legislative committee that is looking into sexual misconduct allegations involving the football program. And the testimony was not good for Coach Orgeron. He is now accused of being a liar, and he is doubling down, saying that he doesn't recall a conversation with Gloria Scott. But what was your perception about what came out of that committee hearing last week?
Well, it was interesting because it was the first time that we really heard Miss Gloria Scott's story in detail. The Hush Blackwell report mentioned it, but it was in much more vague terms. The report said that a grandmother who worked in the Superdome security reported being sexually harassed by Darius Geis. And notably, the Hush Blackwell report said that she had spoken to an LSU football coach about what happened and that he asked if she wanted an apology. But the report did not say who the coach was. And of course, LSU has quite a few coaches on their football staff. So last Friday was the first time that we heard Gloria Scott, first of all, publicly identify herself as the person on the receiving end of this alleged sexual harassment. And secondly, it was the first time that she spoke out publicly saying that it was indeed Ed Orgeron who she spoke to after this happened. So it was all new and kind of groundbreaking because he had previously said that he did not have this conversation with her. And I think now the question kind of is, who do you believe? And I think that the legislative committee that's been holding hearings on this is trying to get to the bottom of that. They're saying that they want to hear from Scott Woodward and they want to hear from Ed Orgeron.
And yesterday, Denise Marcel, who's part of that committee, said she thought Coach O would not come before the committee. They have been invited. Now, a subpoena would be different, but we had subpoenas in the Trump years with people subpoenaed to come to committees, and they never showed. And we'll see what happens in Louisiana. But here is Gloria Scott, 74 years old, a lady working at a time when many people, of course, are retired, trying to make a few extra dollars as a security guard at the Superdome. And 4 years ago, she encountered Darius Geis, who at that time was the star player for LSU, the leading rusher on the team, and first-round draft pick. He, of course, was in his physical prime and a very young man in his early 20s, making advancements, according to her, in the most crude ways. Here is Gloria Scott, her description of the conversation she says she had with Coach Orgeron.
The coach called me back himself.
Okay.
And he told me that they had Darius in the office, he and Sharon, and that's when he was talking to me on the phone, and he wanted me to let Darius apologize to me, and I told him, no, he couldn't apologize to me.
Okay, so let me make sure, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, because mm-hmm. that's what they're asking, the coach that called you back was Coach O?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you asked him for Mr. Geist to be removed from the upcoming game.
Right. And he played a bowl game, the Citrus Bowl.
Citrus Bowl.
Uh-huh.
And what was that conversation like? Tell me what happened.
Well, first of all, he just kept asking me to let Darius get on the phone and talk with me. He's so sorry, got his head hanging down, and he has had a troubled life, and he was just playing with me. He didn't mean those things, what he was saying. He was just kidding. I told him, no such thing. There's no kidding in that. You don't kid like that. You don't play like that with nobody. I don't care how old they are. You don't do that. You just don't do that. So when he seen he couldn't convince me to let him apologize, so that's when he asked me, well, what you want us to do for punishment for him? And that's when I told him what I wanted. And I said, I'm not trying to hurt him or take his career from him, but I figured that would hurt him more than anything not to be able to take part in that bowl game.
So,
and he played in it.
And I think this is where I'm having a lot of trouble. Huh. You were hurt. You have been wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Still took in consideration someone's career.
Yeah.
And even with you doing that, they still didn't offer you any relief.
Mm-mm. No. He told me he'll get back with me and never did call back.
All right. That's Gloria Scott telling what she says happened. And she also says that I think it's her sister was with her when this phone call was made. And that two other people were in the room with Coach O who could either corroborate this testimony or refute it. And those are Sharon Lewis, ranking official at LSU, and Darius Geis, who, of course, is free to talk himself. He could either deny it or confirm it himself. She seems to be a very convincing witness. Andrea Gallo doesn't sound like somebody who drove from New Orleans to make this up and make a scene based on a lie. So what's your perception about whether this will have legs or whether the story will be one of those that will just go away very quietly?
I think that it is a story that has legs. I think that it's caused a lot of people to question what's happening in the football program. And I think that a lot of people have also forgotten that in USA Today's earlier reporting on Darius Geis and on an allegation that Geis had raped a young woman at LSU, there was another allegation about Ed Ogeron, which was that the boyfriend of one of these young women who alleged that she was raped reported it to Coach Ogeron, and his response was something along the lines of everybody's girlfriend cheats on them or something to that effect. So this is not the first kind of high-profile allegation that's been leveled against him in all of this, and I think that we'll have to see what sort of action LSU decides to take and whether he says anything more on the topic. He really has not said very much. He read like a prepared statement yesterday on the radio about it, but last night at his press conference, he didn't answer direct questions about it whenever reporters asked him.
His statement yesterday was, I don't recall the conversation, and I remember as a young kid watching the Watergate hearings, and that was the fallback, I don't recall. That's a way of not answering the question without saying the other person is a liar, which earlier he pretty much did, and actually had a university spokesperson, the former editor of Tiger Rag, Cody Worsham, call Gloria Scott a liar. Not in those words, but saying that the conversation never took place. Well, there are people who could be called, including Sharon Lewis, including Darius Geis. They could confirm or deny this. Coach O could take a polygraph. He could reveal his phone records. There are ways of attempting to get to the bottom of this, but does LSU have the stomach to find out if the coach is on the level or if he is lying? What do you think, Andrea Gallo?
I think that there are also any number of other people in the athletic department who could potentially be asked about this. I mean, There are people who work for Ed Ogeron who schedule his days and his phone calls and things like that. You know, I think that there are other ways that this can also be explored. And I don't know. I think it's believable that other people would have potentially known or scheduled this phone call or helped put him in touch with Gloria Scott, if all of this is, you know, accurate. So I guess we'll find out.
And a listener notes, and we will go to the phone lines when we take a short break, after we take a short break, but a listener notes, this could, of course, exonerate Coach O if he is telling the truth. And we'll see what happens. But as Andrea has stated, this is a story that likely has just begun, not ended. 877-217-5757, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 for Andrea Gallo. And LSU's football season is fewer than 6 months from the start date, opening at Pasadena in the Rose Bowl against UCLA. And Coach O is under fire, and some say for good reason. Others say this is a witch hunt, but based on the compelling testimony of Gloria Scott last week before a legislative committee, it appears to be anything but a witch hunt. And is sordid as it is, I think it's important before we'll take a call or two for Andrea, for our listeners to hear Gloria Scott's account of how Darius Geis treated her. Here is what she said to the committee last Friday.
And about four young men came walking up to me, and one of them I knew was Darius Geis because I know him from on TV and when LSU had to play in New Orleans with the BYU game, and the area that they would let to stay an hour after the game with their parents, that's the area that I worked. So Darius walks up to me. First of all, I don't know how my story got out, but it got out 2 weeks ago without my name. I don't know who put it out. But it was my granddaughter happened to saw it on Instagram, and USA Today put it out. I don't know where they got it from. But anyhow, I'm sitting in a chair near the elevator, 8. These young men walk up to me, and Darius walks up in front of them. He stands in front of me. And he said, "Oh, I like him like that, like you." I said, "What?" He said, "Yes." He said, "I like having sex with older women like you." And I said, "Young man, don't disrespect me like that." I said, "I know you have a mother. You may have a grandmother. And I have grandsons." You know, he said, "Oh, no, I want your body. I want you to F me. I'm not going to use the word." And I was so hurt and I was so nervous and upset.
All right, Andrea, yeah. It's hard not to be affected by that testimony.
She was visibly emotional as she was testifying before the hearing. I mean, she was shaking a little bit. She was crying. She displayed quite a bit of emotion as she told this story. At one point, Karen Carter Peterson, who's on the committee, even got up and went over to her and kind of, you know, sat with her to try to calm her down a little bit.
All right. 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. Jim and Walker. Hi, Jim. Good morning.
Good morning. It's obvious that LSU has not learned anything. Nothing has changed in the corporate culture in the athletic department. And the only way you can do that, the way you change it, is that you just rip it out by the roots and you replace it with, you know, new employees who actually understand what is expected of them as adults and as people that are in charge.
All right. Well, thank you, Jim. We have not had any employees at LSU fired over the sexual misconduct investigation. Extensive report from Hush Blackwell, Andrea. Of course, King Alexander has lost his gig at Oregon State, and Les Miles has been canned at Kansas. Is LSU going to be able to get away from this without some people losing their jobs?
There's certainly certainly under a lot of pressure to reconsider how they have handled the disciplinary aspect of this. But I think it's also important to ask the question, who is really in charge here at LSU? Is it the interim chancellor and president, Tom Galligan, or is it the board of supervisors, or is it Scott Woodward? In theory, I think that you would believe that it's the president of LSU, but as I reported a couple of weeks ago, both of LSU's previous presidents and chancellors, Mike Martin and F. King Alexander, say that they were essentially powerless to control their athletic departments, that they were under pressure from the governor, they were under pressure from the board, and that it was really the board, which is entirely appointed by the governor, who runs the university.
Patrick in Innisfil Estates. Patrick, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. So Coach O didn't actually harass this woman, but it looks, let's say he did do this phone call and he's lying about it. He acted as a mediator. Should he be fired for, I mean, what's the result? If he made this phone call and acted as a mediator, he didn't actually do the sexual harassment, what is he guilty of? What, and should he be fired?
All right, Andrea. There are people calling for his head, and of course, there is always the chance that he is telling the truth. But if he lied, and if he is proved to have lied, some people believe that's a deal breaker, that he will never have any credibility. How can we ever believe anything else he says? What do you think?
Sure. I think it's up to, you know, LSU and the public at large to decide what they think of these allegations against him. I wouldn't want to tell other people how to feel exactly, but I would say as to the question about what exactly is the allegation specifically against Coach O, I think the idea is that people believe he may not have been truthful to the Hush Blackwell investigators whenever he said that this phone call with Gloria Scott, he was not involved in it. She is now saying he is the person who I spoke to.
Well, and also, if he were to go before that committee, he would be testifying under oath. Presumably, if he were to lie under oath, he could be charged with perjury, which is probably the reason why he will never go before a legislative committee. But I was over the weekend, I was in Columbus, Ohio, and by the home of the Ohio State coach, Woody Hayes, who died in 1987. He won 5 national championships. He lived in a 1,632-square-foot house, 3 bedrooms, 1.5 baths. When he left Ohio State with his 5 national championships at 65 years old, he was earning $43,000 a year in 1978. Coach O earned $7 million a year. He's had a up-and-down career. He has a national title, but 1 as opposed to 5, and he's making $7 million. The governor of Louisiana earns $135,000 a year. Andrea, that says something about our priorities in this state, and we're not unique. There are many others like us. But the coach, you mentioned the power base at LSU, the football coach, until he is sacked, is the most powerful person in the state of Louisiana. And Coach O, because of his stature as the highest paid public official and the coach of LSU, he has to have a whole lot of issues for the posse to come and take him away.
Sure, I think that that's one kind of belief that we've seen this legislative committee express frustration over during their first hearing on all of this. Beth Mizell at one point kind of stopped and said, you know, isn't it just unbelievable to think that when we talk about the most powerful person in Louisiana, we are talking about the LSU football coach. That being said, you know, as you pointed out, Jim, most other universities, especially in the SEC, operate in similar matters. And in fact, compared to some of his SEC coaching peers, Coach O is not making the same kind of money that they are.
Well, you have covered this story along with others. This isn't Andrea's only beat, and one of those is the Attorney General scandal involving a sexual misconduct claim that is more than a claim against a gentleman, Mr. McGee, who's no longer there. But the same law firm that investigated that for Jeff Landry, the AG, also investigated the LSU situation. Taylor Porter, as the advocate said, did LSU hire lawyers to probe Miles' scandal or cover it up? What's Taylor Porter up to, and how is the situation analogous to what's happening in state government with what's happening at LSU?
Sure. It's interesting how these two stories kind of dovetail together, particularly over the Taylor Porter connection. And I'd say the biggest kind of similarity here is that in 2013, LSU hired Taylor Porter, even though Taylor Porter was already working for them as their in-house counsel at the time. Shelby McKenzie was a Taylor Porter attorney. He was also LSU's general counsel. But LSU hired Taylor Porter to conduct a kind of so-called independent investigation into these sexual harassment allegations against Les Miles. The investigation never saw the light of day. It was buried from the public. Nobody knew that it happened.
We'll let Andrea finish the thoughts about this, and we'll have more when we return after this 90-second pause. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana, and we're joined for a few more moments with Andrea Gallo, the ace reporter for The Advocate, who's been covering the LSU sexual misconduct scandal. Two people have been placed on suspension, and, of course, King Alexander's gone at Oregon State. Les Miles is gone at Kansas. And before we get to the similarities again that Andrea was talking about regarding Taylor Porter's investigation of sexual misconduct in the AG's office and sexual misconduct at LSU, a listener asks about King Alexander. He could very well be an important person in this scenario if he decides to start talking. And at this point, he may not have a whole lot to lose, Andrea.
That's right. And he actually has already started talking. We saw last week he spoke to the Chronicle of Higher Education, and he talked about how he was forced into this kind of situation where he had to fire Joe Oliva and hire Scott Woodward. And he talked about how heavily that weighed on him. So I think that that is just one of many things we may hear from him in the future.
And as far as the similarities between the investigation of Mr. McGee with the AG's office and the LSU situation, some of the same people from the Taylor Porter firm are involved, some of the exact same people. And in both cases, it does appear, now, it appears that the firm was trying to put the best face on a bad situation for the entity it was working for.
It's a very similar situation. It was Vicky Crochet, who is known as a lawyer who investigates sexual harassment. I mean, she also performed the sexual harassment investigation into Johnny Anderson under the John Bel Edwards administration. But she's the attorney who helped probe the Les Miles sexual harassment in 2013 and who led the probe into the alleged sexual harassment from Pat McGee this past year. And in both cases, those documents have been kept from the public. In the LSU situation, USA Today filed a lawsuit to get a copy of it. And in the Pat McGee situation, as you know, Jeff Landry filed a lawsuit against me to prevent us from having it.
And he lost.
He did. Yes. So we got those documents, we've reported on them, and Mr. McGee has since resigned from his job.
Andrea, thank you for your good work and for the conversation today. We'll be in touch. Andrea Gallo.
Thanks, Jim.
See you soon. And we're joined in studio by Dr. Sanjay Juneja, who is a Baton Rougean, BS in biology, 2009. From LSU, and an MD, LSU School of Medicine, Shreveport, 2013, a young man who is with the Hematology and Oncology Clinic, and he is here to talk about a few different things. I understand you have quite a following on TikTok. How did that happen?
Yes, sir. First of all, thanks for having me. Very humbled to be here and everything y'all do for the community. It really happened by happen chance. At first, it was kind of this thing for me to just have fun with because there was a lot of anonymity with it. Because you don't really have a follower base. And then I started getting kind of followers on it and thought, you know, I should really use this for education, at least to some degree, so it's not all in vain. And it's really taken off. A lot of kids these days, the younger generation, really like to be proactive about their health. So it's pretty remarkable how much they're interested in hearing about these mm-hmm. cancer and blood disorders.
Well, and you have how many followers?
I just got over 500,000 between Instagram and TikTok.
500,000 followers for Dr. Sanjay Juneja. And if you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757. Now, you're a Baton Rouge guy. You went to high school where?
Baton Rouge High.
Baton Rouge High. Mm-hmm. One of the best in the country.
That's it.
You must have gotten a very good education. But you have this passion, which is not the easiest of jobs. You're involved with cancer diagnoses, and this is something nobody wants to get. And I suppose you have to tell people frequently that they have been diagnosed positively for cancer.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I do.
How do you get through that?
You know, my wife and I, we both practiced there, and we both went into oncology kind of for the emotional aspect of it. And that's really just to, there's so much security that can be found when you're educated about what's ahead of you. Mm-hmm. And it's very humbling because you see this, like, tremendous, you know, courage and strength in people, you know, quote unquote, everyday people, when they know what they're in for. When it's really scary is when you don't know what you're in for. You got a blindfold on, you're in open water, you find out you have cancer, and you're not really sure what's going to happen. So, you know, we do the best we can to really educate because kind of with education, you get empowered mm-hmm. over your disease. And then if you can make them feel better about what the plan is, what the expectations are, what you're looking for, then you can at least go home and say, I'm doing everything I can. I didn't cause the diagnosis, but at least to make it the most manageable and make them the most confident about dealing with it. And of course, a lot of cancers are curable, and we cure cancers every day as well. So it's just knowing what you're in for.
How has COVID affected this? Are there more or fewer diagnoses of cancer, or is it, and what would be the reasons for that in this last crazy year we've had?
Gosh, you know, when people say, is oncology hard? You know, you can always look at the other side and say, okay, am I making a situation better? Again, because you didn't give the diagnosis per se. But what was really hard this past year is when people ask, you know, now that I'm incurable and it's spread, could I have been in a curative setting 6 months ago when I, you know, this was going to be biopsied or this was going to be investigated? And that's where you feel really sick to your stomach, because the people that are left, especially with the family, then have that extra element of stress to say, like, well, if it wasn't for COVID in 2020, you know, Pop would still be around. And that's been hard for me. But in addition, screening okay. is a concept that we use to get a cancer out before it spreads, right? Like
right.
the whole concept is get it when it's early. So get your mammogram, colonoscopy, and then God willing, you're cured. You just take it out. So those fell back humongously across the country, obviously, because it was elective. And so now people are coming in more advanced, and the estimates are about 10,000 people are going to now pass away from a cancer they wouldn't have because they missed their screening during that year.
So, and that's related to COVID to some extent, obviously. What about increases in types of cancer? We live in so-called cancer alley. Are there particular types of cancers where you're seeing an increase?
Yeah, so pancreatic cancer seems to be kind of the big thing now that everyone fears, and for good reason. So that seems to have kind of picked up. I think a lot of that is with, you know, diabetes and these things, but also a lot of people are concerned about the plastics we use with water. So that's a very challenging diagnosis because it usually doesn't present with symptoms or problems until it's a little mm-hmm. too late. And then we have a lot of lung cancer as well. Just we've done a great job at reducing smoking, but we do have quite an incidence of lung cancer compared to other places.
The treatment is more effective now. You've made advances, but still, if you get a stage 4 diagnosis, it's quite often a bad result. But even people today, there are people who are alive and well and have been for many years who had stage 4 cancer.
Exactly. And I'm so glad you said that. You know, for decades, it was chemotherapy and just chemo, which is to some degree a poison. You're poisoning mm-hmm. the cancer cells, but not enough to poison your own body. But now we have so many drugs that target a cancer cell. Sometimes just by mouth, you just take an oral pill. So you don't have this kind of shotgun approach to treating cancer, whereas, you know, with some lung cancers, my wife had a 92-year-old that somebody would say, there's no way you're treating a stage 4 92-year-old. Mm-hmm. And she got a blood sample. They had a mutation on their lung cancer. And with an oral pill, it's all melted away 3 months later. And she's stage 4, but she's living a much more fulfilling life in her 90s. So it's really cool now that you can treat without really, you know, derailing somebody necessarily with their physical health.
Dr. Sanjay Juneja, Baton Rouge proud, and he's with the Hematology and Oncology Clinic here in his hometown. Ray in Prairieville, you're on the air with Dr. Juneja. Hi, Ray.
Thank you. Also, I just had a meeting yesterday with my cardiologist, and he suggested that I get a book out of prevent and reverse heart disease. Is there anything on cancer that a person should include in diet?
All right. Your line's a little shaky, but said he, if I heard him right, he visited with his cardiologist, and he asked about advances in diet.
Food and diet, right. Yes, sir. One, I'm glad you're seeing a cardiologist. And yes, there is a lot of data that suggests kind of what we put in may be better or worse for cancer. Vegetables and fruits, antioxidants, they always, and with good reason, they control mm-hmm. damage to the cells, so you want to get those in, you know, the best you can. And then smoked meats and some of these other things, red meats, you read a lot about that. There is some data that's saying that these might cause inflammation, which inflammation is very significantly linked with cancer. But for the most part, if you can have, you know, fruits, vegetables, mm-hmm. produce, and reduce those smoked meats, it can be beneficial.
How much is family history a factor in cancer?
I'm really glad you asked that. So a lot of people that, you know, think I can't get cancer because I don't have a family history of it. It does contribute, but it's certainly more of a problem independent of family history. Right. And all cancer is, it's a normal cell of yours that over time, every mm-hmm. time it replicates, it gets a couple of bad mutations that get undetected, which is why generally the older population get cancers compared to younger, because they've just had that many times that their cells have replicated. So over time, you do the things the best you can to stay healthy, but cancer happens because of these replication errors over time in your life. And so it is more, you know, specific to the individual than something that was just handed down by your mom or dad.
And what's been the biggest advancement as far as the science in combating cancer?
So you're going to hear all the time about something called molecular or targeted therapies, and of course, immunotherapy. And those are all in the same bucket. And that goes back to looking at an actual identity, like what color shirt and pants is this, you know, cancer cell wearing? And a lot of times that's not on all of your cells all the time. So now you can attack the guy that's mm-hmm. wearing the orange shirt and the blue pants. That's the cancer cell specifically. And we look for those quote-unquote targets. And that's just a much more focused approach with less side effects generally than just generalized chemotherapy, which, again, is a shotgun kind of poison. How much can the body tolerate while killing the fastest replicating mm-hmm. cells, which are cancer cells?
We're visiting for a few moments more with Dr. Sanjay Juneja of the Hematology and Oncology Clinic. Your number again is 877-217-5757. You can send us an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. And in our last segment, we will also hear from Wes Hawes, who has moved to Baton Rouge to get the Blue Zoo Aquarium started tomorrow at the Mall of Louisiana. And we'll be back after this quick pause on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. A bit more time with Dr. Sanjay Juneja of the Hematology and Oncology Clinic. 877-217-5757 is your number in our remaining time with him. And let's go to Barry in Mid-City. Barry, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Barry.
Good morning.
Barry, get closer to the phone, please.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'd like to ask the doctor to talk about intermittent fasting, not specifically about cancer, but just generally for your health, please.
All right.
So certainly, one, you know, as a cancer specialist, a little outside my field, but I did do internal medicine. And the data has shown, you know, in certain people, if you're a diabetic, it's probably not the best thing to do, especially if you're on insulin. But it basically is the concept of tapping into your fat stores by having prolonged fasts. So when your body doesn't get like the calories it needs because you've been fasting, you get kind of leaner muscle mass. It's really shown to help what's called metabolic syndrome and possible diabetes. It's a very effective modality that's, you know, easy to introduce in your lifestyle. Intermittent usually means 16 hours of fasting. So if you like stopped eating at 8 p.m., you wouldn't eat till noon. But you can still have water, black coffee, things that don't have calories in them. And there's a lot of data to support that there's a lot of health benefits with it. So it's definitely something to talk to your primary doctor about. I do it myself.
Mm-hmm. A listener asks about selecting a doctor. Sometimes, of course, it doesn't happen until someone gets a terrible diagnosis, but is that an important part of the process? I would think I'm preaching to the choir, but what do you think?
Yeah, and that's something I, you know, when I speak on podcasts about with people that aren't medical, and I kind of hear some of the experiences they've had with certain physicians in any specialty, and I always encourage second opinions if somebody just has a gut feeling that doesn't feel right. It's very important that you feel good about your relationship and where you're headed with whatever that process is. So, you know, if you don't, you can always ask your primary doctor, hey, I'd like to get a second opinion. Again, I encourage it. So that gut feeling is pretty invaluable. You know, we all pass away, but it's how do you feel in the process of taking care of your health? If you feel good about it, that's a good thing.
And as far as the age we're in now, are doctors seeing most of their patients in person now, or is this still, in some cases, being done remotely?
Sure. I mean, I think COVID, there's a lot of talk about how, you know, are we going to kind of transition to more of a virtual visit style when it's appropriate. You know, I'm pretty traditional as far as the physical exam goes. I mean, that's just such a huge tool with physicianing that especially in the primary care setting, that you do need those inpatient visits. But I think to reduce kind of germ spread and also the easeability of access and hopefully even be more affordable to have these virtual visits, I would love for people to get more time with a physician if it's easier and more cost effective.
What have you done, Doc, as far as protecting yourself from COVID?
So, you know, I didn't get any time off. A lot of blood disorders happen with COVID. They don't talk about it, but a lot of unprovoked blood clots. So people mm-hmm. get clots in their lungs or even strokes because of COVID, even without any symptoms, and people that are younger. But from the get, I was, you know, obviously taking all the precautions as they were coming out, even though then they kind of recanted on some. But we've done all the social, you know, distancing for sure, avoided large crowds. I've gotten vaccinated now, and I already had kind of immunity or antibodies before the vaccines. So it's just one of those things that's really going to change the trajectory of everything when it comes to healthcare and how we interact and sports. I'm a huge sports fan. I was homecoming king runner up, little self shout out. I was just really proud of my graduating class in 2009. What's that?
At Baton Rouge High?
In LSU.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I'm a Tiger.
That's serious.
I got one tattoo as the state of Louisiana because of that experience. Just catching a touchdown in the end zone at halftime was
unbelievable.
Where's
your tattoo?
It's on the inside of my arm. It's one of those not cool places.
That's all right. It's okay. But you've done well. And lastly, for those who, you know, if you get a lump or so quite often people think the worst, myself included, but what would you do? What should we do if we have any kind of concern that we may have a problem?
Yeah, I mean, if you have any concern, I know it's so scary. Like, trust me, even though I'm triple specialized, I feel the same way as a patient. I'm like, oh, I don't have time for bad news, basically. But with most things, today in 2021, if you catch it early, like even if you have a little blood in your stool or a cough that's coughing up blood, if you're worried about something, most times, all the time earlier is better. So if you get in there, you find somebody you trust, we can navigate the waters for you. But just trust me, even if it seems really bad, it could be something manageable. But getting it in time is just so important.
Well, thank you. Dr. Sanjay Juneja from Baton Rouge, who is doing good work at the Hematology and Oncology Clinic. Appreciate your time and keep up your good work, doing important work.
Thank you so much, and appreciate everybody listening.
A frontline worker. And we're joined now in studio, pinch hitting for Wes Hawes, is John Hepworth, who's involved in the new aquarium at the Mall of Louisiana. And this is something that, of course, has been much awaited over the last few months. And hopefully we'll have Wes on soon. Heather Day told me about his remarkable backstory. He's lost about 200 pounds. He's living at the Renaissance here in Baton Rouge trying to get this endeavor open. He's got 7 kids, 4 adopted from Ethiopia. He's had an epiphany about his sexual orientation, and he is living a life that he finds rewarding, and good for him that this has happened in his life, and we were going to talk to him about a whole bunch of stuff. But John Hepworth is here to talk about the Blue Zoo Aquarium. And, John, tell us more about this big opening tomorrow.
Yes, thank you so much. And thank you, Jim, for having
me. My pleasure.
And I apologize for
the
absence
of
Wes.
That's all right. That's all right. He's not here, but you are, and we're glad you are. So tell us about the Blue Zoo Aquarium.
So Blue Zoo is an interactive aquarium inside of a mall space. So it's a modest aquarium. but it's highly interactive. And we focus a lot on inspiration and education, meaning you're not just looking at fish. You're able to pet them and touch them and be not only visually stimulated, but physically stimulated because you're doing all sorts of stuff in our aquarium. You're playing with water tables. You're feeding birds. You're playing with turtles. You're getting a manicure from Manicure Fish. Those fish that you could stick in your hands into one of our tanks and they nibble on your dead skin.
Well, this is a 16,000 square foot exhibit space. It's a big place, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Yes, it's a good sized place. It's our third location, and we're really happy how the design of this aquarium turned out for the state of Louisiana. It flows really well, and I think will please to all number of different types of categories of crowds.
And you have other aquariums in Spokane and Oklahoma City. How was Baton Rouge chosen?
So we paid a market research company to research cities and locations that are in need of different types of family entertainment. And since we specialize in aquariums, we first partnered up with Brookfield Properties, which is the real estate company that owns a lot of these malls across America. And Brookfield mentioned Baton Rouge. We came down, fell in love with the space, and we decided to build out.
Well, John, we know malls across the country are not doing so well, and we just had one that used to be the signature shopping place in Baton Rouge, Cortano Mall, being torn down. What do you think the future of the Mall of Louisiana is based on this brave adventure you're taking in a place that is now what? It's opened in 97, 24 years old.
Yes, and that's a great question. I think to answer that, malls are getting smarter, and they're realizing that a lot of the retail purchasing that was happening, you know, short of 10 years ago is now happening online. And so now they're turning towards things that you can't buy online, entertainment, things that you got to touch and feel. So now they're bringing in bowling alleys, restaurants, and now aquariums.
Bowling alleys? We don't have a bowling alley yet.
We don't have a bowling alley yet, but you know.
I used to love bowling alleys.
Right. But Brookfield Properties, Simon Properties, I can speak from them when I say that they're innovative and they're smart business people, and they recognize that in order to keep the mall structure going, they have to go towards entertainment.
And there are all kinds of exhibits, I think more than 30 of them, and we're talking about major attractions, sharks, jellyfish, river giants.
Yes.
This has been, I'm sure, an ambitious process getting all this together.
You know, this aquarium build-out has been one of our easiest because of our first two. For instance, our Arapaima, one of our river giant fish, that's in our aquarium now. He was actually stationed in OKC for a time, right? So gathering him up and taking him down here wasn't nearly the process of first getting him down in Florida. So it's a process, but we feel confident that we're getting better as we go.
Well, it opens tomorrow. What's the start time?
So it's the mall hours, 11 to 7.
11 to 7,
mm-hmm.
And you can see all these major exhibits and 7 days a week?
Yes, 7 days a week.
Seven days a week.
We are closed on Easter, however.
Easter Sunday,
the mall's closed.
But you will be open Good Friday.
Yes, sir.
And you'll be open tomorrow as in Holy Thursday, so it should be a fun time for all. And Baton Rouge chosen. I'm sure you had many other options to make this the third location joining Spokane and Oklahoma City.
Yes, sir.
What were some of the other choices, Kim? Do you know?
You know,
potential choices.
Right. I think we're looking at Arkansas. We're looking at a few different other locations. But right now, we're going to put a pause on maybe build outs and focus on these three aquariums, getting them healthy because we've grown pretty fast.
The Blue Zoo Aquarium opening tomorrow, as in Thursday, at the Mall of Louisiana, 11 a.m. So right after Talk Louisiana, if you're so inclined, you can go there. Thank you, John Hepworth. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support. Until tomorrow, thank you for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.